Hello. Welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, May 15th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin by reading the obituaries in the second hour. Today's list includes four names: Lori Louise Egan, 62, of Phoenix; Eugene Mickelson, known as Mike, 93, of Phoenix; Megan Lorraine O'Donnell, 69, of Port Angeles, Washington; and Floyd Westall, 63, of the Valley. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the people listed in today's obituaries. And now we're going to go to the business section of the paper. Looks like there's three articles on this page. The first one is entitled, McDonald's Announces U.S. Hiring Blitz. This was by Melina Kahn for the USA Today. McDonald's is planning to hire up to 375,000 workers at restaurants across the country this summer. This according to a company announcement on May 12th. Joe Erlinger, who is McDonald's USA president, made the announcement at one of the chain's Ohio restaurants alongside U.S. Secretary of Labor Lori Chavez DeRemer and Ohio Lieutenant Governor Jim Tressel. The company said in a news release that the hiring blitz is one of its biggest in years. It comes as McDonald's aims to reach a total of 50,000 restaurants by the year 2027. That's an increase in 900 restaurants over the next 2 years. Ellinger said in his news release, quote, I often think about the time I spent working in our restaurants as a general manager, and it was immediately clear that crew members are the heart and soul of this brand, unquote. Now, McDonald's is the leading chain restaurant in terms of sales in the United States, having generated over $53 billion in 2023. McDonald's says it employs nearly 2 million people worldwide. In the United States, McDonald's says 1 in 8 people have worked in one of its restaurants. However, the fast food chain's employee turnover rate is believed to be high. In response to McDonald's announcement, Chavez DeRemer said in a post on X that the company is, quote, a sparkling ripple effect of economic prosperity for our workers, communities, and economy, unquote. In 2024, during President Donald Trump's election campaign, he worked a drive-thru at a Pennsylvania McDonald's. And that was the article, McDonald's Announces U.S. Hiring Blitz. Our second article from the business section, U.S. Car Prices Surge as Tariffs Hit. This was written by Kalia Hall for the Reuters News Group out of Detroit. U.S. new vehicle prices surged in April, according to data released on May 12th, a sign that the effects of President Donald Trump's auto tariffs are rippling through the car market. The average price the consumers paid after discounts and promotions rose 2.5% from March. That's more than double the typical 1.1% increase over these 2 months in recent years, according to Cox Automotive's Kelly's Blue Book showed. In the past decade, the only larger such increase was in April 2020, when prices rose 2.7%, and that was during the pandemic-related factory shutdowns. Automakers are adjusting to the 25% U.S. tariffs on vehicle imports from many countries, including our major trading partners Mexico and Canada, but few have raised sticker prices. Some, like Hyundai, Ford, and the Jeep maker Stellantis, have even rolled out deals to reassure buyers and keep sales flowing. But still, consumer demand has risen over the past few months as buyers rush to get ahead of any tariff-related price increases, dealers and the auto executives have said. And that has translated into new car shoppers shelling out more on average at dealerships. Yet even if car makers hold prices steady, Consumer expectations that tariffs will eventually send prices higher have likely led to inflation on certain models. That's according to the Cox executive analyst, Aaron Keating. Aaron said, quote, those models got more demand, and therefore the local pricing dynamics at the dealership level likely helped those prices go higher, unquote. Now, Ford is charging more for its Mexico-built products, according to Reuters. Some models of the Mustang Mach-E electric SUV, or the Maverick pickup, and the Bronco Sport, they'll cost as much as $2,000 more, according to a notice sent to dealers. Wholesale used vehicle prices rose in April, according to Cox's Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index. It increased 4.9%, up from 2.7% in March. Promotions have kept prices steady overall, some model makers have said. Consumer incentive programs are still very strong, according to Todd Scott, dealer partner at Zot Automotive Group, which has Ford, Stellantis, and Toyota dealerships in the Detroit area. Todd said pricing is fairly stable at this point. Sales incentives on new cars, as a percentage of transaction prices and a measure of discounts and promotions, fell to the lowest since the summer of 2024, Cox said. A dip in the number of vehicles sitting on dealer lots could point to upward pressure on prices in coming months. On a recent webinar with the Automotive Press Association, Cox chief economist Jonathan Smoke noted that fewer than 2.6 million vehicles are on dealer lots, and that supply could fall even further as sales surge and importers reduce deliveries. And that was the article, U.S. Car Prices Surge as Tariffs Hit. Our third article from the business section, United Airlines Bears Brunt of Chaos at Newark Airport. This was written by Rajesh Kumar Singh for the Reuters News Group out of Chicago. United Airlines is facing a financial hit and potential long-term reputational harm as flight delays and cancellations pile up due to the ongoing disruptions at Newark Airport in New Jersey, one of its largest hubs and among the busiest in the country. A facility responsible for guiding air traffic in and out of Newark Liberty International Airport, located about 9 miles from Manhattan, suffered 3 communication outages in the last 2 weeks, including a 90-second radar and telecommunications blackout on May 9th. The Trump administration said on May 12th that it was convening an emergency task force to prevent additional telecommunication outages at Newark, which is the second largest airport in the New York metropolitan area after John F. Kennedy International Airport. Now, the issues at Newark, where nearly 70% of the flights are operated by United, have been far more damaging for the Chicago-based airline than for the key rivals like Delta or American, which only have about 5% and 4% share of the traffic at the airport. Since air traffic control staffing shortages and airspace restrictions began hitting hard on April 26th, more than 9,000 United domestic and international flights, that's about 26% of those scheduled across its network, 9,000 have been delayed, according to the tracking site FlightAware. United has also canceled about 2% of its flights. Company officials ascribe most of the delays and cancellations to the issues at Newark, which they say are causing a ripple effect across the airline's network. And passenger frustration is growing. Last week, many travelers were alarmed by the possibility that pilots could face difficulties landing planes safely. Some passengers vowed never to fly through Newark or on United again. Denise Spillman, a 65-year-old resident of Louisville, Kentucky, said United is off her list for future travel after her return flight from Scotland was delayed amid Newark's air traffic chaos. In an email to customers on May 12th, United CEO Scott Kirby assured them that, quote, all the flights in and out of EWR are absolutely safe, unquote. But for the airline, the timing of the chaos is particularly damaging. The summer travel season, which is typically the industry's most profitable period, is fast approaching. Newark is United's key gateway for its lucrative transatlantic routes, whereas Delta and American Airlines use New York's JFK Airport for their transatlantic hub. United has cut about 10% of its daily Newark flights and has waived change fees and fare differences for customers affected by the delays and cancellations. Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation on May 11th, Kirby said the disruptions would have a financial impact on the company, though he did not provide specific figures. Former United CEO Oscar Munoz was more direct, telling Reuters the fallout would likely be, quote, significant, unquote. Now, the blow comes as the airline industry grapples with slowing travel demand following the economic fallout of President Donald Trump's trade war, which has undercut revenue forecast across the specter. In April, United forecast lower than expected profit for the second quarter and warned of downside risk to its full-year outlook if the U.S. economy slipped into a recession. The Federal Aviation Administration said on May 12th it would propose flight cuts at Newark to ease the stress. Constraints at the airport have already forced United to reduce its daily departures down to just 295. That's down 33% from its pre-pandemic levels. In a bid to minimize the revenue hit, Kirby said the company is now using bigger jets. Industry officials and analysts said United had put itself in a bind as a result of its move to consolidate operations at Newark and exit JFK back in 2016. Munoz, who served as the company's CEO from 2015 to 2020 before handing over the reins to Kirby, said the strategy was short-sighted and, quote, arguably one of the single worst mistakes, unquote, made by the airline. Kirby has also called that decision a mistake. In March, he said that United would like to have a presence at JFK. United returned to the New York airport in 2021 using temporary takeoff and landing slots that were made available during the pandemic, but the company failed to secure enough slots to be competitive, which led it to stop operating at the airport a year later. The airline is negotiating a partnership with New York-based JetBlue Airways, according to Reuters that reported this in April, and the deal is widely expected to pave the way for United to regain a foothold at the airport. Munoz said, quote, getting back into JFK for a company like United would be incredibly beneficial, unquote. And that was the article, United Airlines Bears Brunt of Chaos at Newark Airport. We're coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over from the business section to the sports section. Okay, from the front page of the sports section, the top of the page, there's this big picture. It looks like it's in the State Farm Stadium in Glendale. Yeah, back on January 5th, and you can see the red zone and the big screen at the end of the end zone, and you can see some players on the field. Looks like they're lining up for a play. It's the game between the Cardinals and the San Francisco 49ers. But right underneath that picture is the title of the article, Save the Dates. All righty, Save the Dates. This is an article written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. NFL diehards can start making their fall plans now. On Wednesday, May 14th, the league announced the full schedules for all 32 teams. It's an exciting time for the Arizona Cardinals, who will play two primetime games in 2025, and they entered the season with legitimate playoff aspirations for the first time in the Jonathan Gannon era. Now much will change between now and September as the teams go through training camp and preseason, but Here are our early predictions for each game on the Cardinals' schedule. All times are Mountain Standard Time. So in Week 1, Sunday, September 7th, they're at the New Orleans Saints on CBS at 10 a.m. At 300-1, the Saints have the league's worst odds of winning the Super Bowl. And it's easy to see why. Second-round pick Tyler Shough is likely to be their starting quarterback, and the rest of the roster isn't much better. The Cardinals will likely be heavy road favorites to open the season. Prediction: Cardinals over the Saints. Now in Week 2, that's Sunday, September 14th, versus the Carolina Panthers on CBS at 1:05 p.m. The Panthers have had the Cardinals' number in recent years. They destroyed them in the 2016 NFC Championship game, started their downfall in 2021, and they eliminated them from playoff contention last season. And that stretch could continue here. The Cardinals will likely enter the game as favorites, but Bryce Young showed down the stretch that he can be relied upon as a franchise quarterback. This will be a good early test for Arizona. Prediction: Panthers over the Cardinals. Now in Week 3, that'll be Sunday, September 21st, they'll be at San Francisco 49ers, and it'll be on Fox at 1:25 p.m. The Cardinals' 24-23 win in Santa Clara last October was the first sign that their rebuild had turned a corner. Even if it did not ultimately lead to a playoff berth, it showed that this team could be competitive again in the NFC West. There is no reason to think they cannot replicate that feat with a much improved roster in 2025. So the prediction is the Cardinals over the 49ers. Week 4, Thursday, September 25th, at home against the Seattle Seahawks on Prime Video at 5:15 p.m. The Seahawks have spent the season overhauling their offense. Geno Smith is out, replaced by Sam Darnold. DK Metcalf is out, replaced by Cooper Kupp. Even coordinator Ryan Grubb is out, replaced by Clint Kubiak. Is the overall product better than it was a year ago? Well, that remains to be seen, but the Cardinals won't mind seeing some new faces. This Seahawks team essentially single-handedly ended their playoff hopes in a pair of crushing defeats late last season, but our prediction is the Cardinals over the Seahawks. Now in Week 5, that'll be Sunday, October 5th, they'll be playing at home against the Tennessee Titans on CBS at 1:05 p.m. The Titans hope that they have finally found a franchise quarterback in Cam Ward. But even if the number one overall pick ascends to immediate stardom, there is a reason this team was picking at the top of the draft. It could be years before the Titans are ready to contend. So my prediction is Cardinals over Titans. Now in Week 6, that'll be Sunday, October 12th, and the Cardinals will be at Indianapolis Colts. The game will be on Fox at 10 a.m. Now, the Colts' hopes in 2025 will largely be dependent on Anthony Richardson and whether he can emerge into a reliable option under center. Coming off of a sophomore season in which he had more touchdowns than interceptions, that's a risky bet. So, our prediction is Cardinals over Colts. Week 7, Sunday, October 19th. They'll be playing the Green Bay Packers at home on Fox TV at 1:25 p.m. The unfortunate reality for the Cardinals is that home games against NFC North opponents offer home field advantage in name only. Last season, it was Bears and Lions fans who descended on State Farm Stadium in droves. This year, it'll be the Packers fans, and that could tilt the advantage to Green Bay in what is, on paper, an even matchup. So our prediction is Packers over the Cardinals. Now, week 8, that's an off week. So then it'll be week 9, and that'll be a Monday, November 3rd, at the Dallas Cowboys. It'll be on ABC at 6:15 p.m. Now, the Cowboys are no longer much of a contender in the NFC West, with the Eagles' continued dominance and the Commanders' emergence. But with Dak Prescott back from injury and George Pickens arriving to complement CeeDee Lamb, they can enter the season with reasonable aspirations of returning to the playoffs. And that makes them favorites against the Cardinals at home on Monday Night Football. So our prediction is Cowboys over Cardinals. Week 10, Sunday, November 9th, they'll be at the Seattle Seahawks. CBS will show it at 2:05 p.m. Now, the Seahawks' home field advantage isn't what it was at the peak of their Legion of Boom heyday, but their dominance over the Cardinals remains strong. They have won 7 in a row against Arizona, and that makes it difficult to envision the Cardinals winning both matchups between the teams. An even split, with each team winning at home, is the most likely outcome. So our prediction is the Seahawks over the Cardinals. On week 11, Sunday, November 16th, they'll be playing the San Francisco 49ers at home. It'll be on Fox at 2:05 p.m. Now, during last season's 6-11 finish, the 49ers are currently the odds-makers' favorite to win the NFC West. So if that reality plays out, this could be a crucial game for the Cardinals' division hopes. And for the first time in recent memory, it is Arizona that has the more talented roster. The 49ers have them beat when it comes to household names, but their core is aging. And so our prediction is Cardinals over 49ers. Now in week 12, Sunday, November 23rd, they'll be playing the Jacksonville Jaguars at home on CBS at 2:05 p.m. With a new regime in charge and Travis Hunter arriving as the second overall pick, the Jaguars are suddenly intriguing. Their success, though, is dependent on Trevor Lawrence, and in 4 seasons, he has not proved himself as a playoff-caliber quarterback. So the advantage goes to Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Our prediction is Cardinals over Jaguars. Week 13, Sunday, November 30th at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Channel on Fox at 11 a.m. Now, Buccaneers will have to navigate the loss of their offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, but they still have the talent to win the NFC South, especially on offense. And that unit is led by Baker Mayfield, Bucky Irving, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and first-round pick Emeka Egbuka. A difficult group to deal with, even for this new-look Cardinals defense. This is the exact type of 50-50 game that the Cardinals need to win to make themselves a playoff team. Our prediction? Cardinals over the Buccaneers. Week 14, Sunday, December 7th, they'll be playing the Los Angeles Rams at home on Fox at 2:25 p.m. The Cardinals dominated a depleted Rams team in Glendale last season, putting together one of their most complete performances of the season in a 41-10 win. Now, don't expect this game to be as easy. The Rams figured things out down the stretch to win the division, and they nearly reached the NFC Championship game. And their offense is the most explosive in the division. So our prediction is that game will be the Rams over the Cardinals. Week 15, Sunday, December 14th at Houston, Texas. Fox on 11 a.m. Now this is going to be a major test for Kyler Murray and the Cardinals offense, especially if they enter with their playoff hopes still hanging in the balance. Texas, led by Will Anderson, who was selected with the number 3 overall pick that Arizona traded away in 2023, those Texans have a formidable defense. but their offensive line remains a mystery, if I was being charitable. This creates a significant opportunity for the Cardinals' remade defensive front, and so our prediction is Cardinals over Texans. Week 16, Sunday, December 21st, versus the Atlanta Falcons at home on Fox at 2:05 p.m. The Falcons' offseason focus has been overhauling their pass rush with the additions of Leonard Floyd, Jalen Walker, and James Pierce Jr. But their success in 2025, though, depends more on the growth of their second-year quarterback, Michael Penix. He has his work cut out to guide this roster to the playoffs. So our prediction is Cardinals over the Falcons. Week 17, it'll be Saturday or Sunday, December 27th or 28th, at Cincinnati Bengals, and the time is yet to be announced. The Bengals host the Cardinals in a very likely cold weather environment. Cincinnati has not done much in the way of external additions this offseason, but the Bengals have kept their core together, unless Trey Hendrickson follows through on his threatened holdout. That star power, you can thank Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins and Hendrickson, makes them a formidable opponent, even if it's hard to envision them making a deep playoff run. Our prediction is the Bengals over the Cardinals. And last but not least, Week 18. It'll be Saturday or Sunday, January 3rd or 4th, at the Los Angeles Rams, and the time is still to be determined. The Cardinals have not found much success in Los Angeles since the Rams moved back. They've gone 3-7 in those games. The teams are more even now that they've been for much of that period, but this is still an uphill battle. In an ideal world, the Cardinals would take care of business and clinch a playoff spot before they got to this point. And our prediction is Rams over the Cardinals. And that was the article, Save the Dates. Our second article from the sports section is entitled D-Backs Escape from San Francisco with a Win by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic out of San Francisco. Well, having played 16 games in 16 days, all of them against contending clubs, the Arizona Diamondbacks went .500. It could have been better. It could have been worse. But the overall tone, after they eked out that 8-7 win over the San Francisco Giants on Wednesday afternoon, May 14th, well, it seemed to be, we'll take it. General Manager Mike Hazen said, quote, I feel like we held our own. I don't know that we played our best baseball, but I feel like we've held our own, and I feel good about that, unquote. The day seemed to sort of sum up that difficult stretch, the good, the bad, and the cautious optimism surrounding it. The good was Ketel Marte smashed a pair of homers. Eugenio Suarez connected on a three-run shot, and the Diamondbacks held on, granted by the skin of their teeth, but held on nonetheless to come away with a series-clinching win over a tough Giants team. And then there was the bad. Marte exited the game early due to what was described as general stiffness. The bullpen nearly coughed up another lead and came about as close as possible to giving up the lead. You see, the Giants had the bases loaded and a full count on Christian Kos before reliever Shelby Miller induced the game-ending pop-up. As for the optimism, well, both Marte and manager Torey Lovullo insist that Marte's health issues are not cause for concern. Both expect that he will be in the lineup when the Diamondbacks are back in action on Friday, May 16th against the Colorado Rockies. And then there's the fact that, hey, a win is a win, one that comes at a time when the Diamondbacks clearly are not firing on all cylinders. Miller said, quote, this was probably the toughest stretch we will have all year. I'm assuming it's not going to get any harder than those 16 games. We've been playing quality baseball. There's still room for improvement in some spots. I know the bullpen. We want to do a better job of securing wins. I think defensively and offensively, once we click, we're going to be a tough team to beat. Now, the game featured a strange, controversial, and ultimately inconsequential play in the eighth inning. With Koss at first base, the Giants' Heliot Ramos hit a slow roller to third, where Suarez fielded and threw late to first. But just as the ball was reaching first base, Koss rounded second and ran directly into Jordan Lawler, who had entered the game for Mart an inning earlier. Koss fell in front of the base and was tagged out. However, the out call was reversed when Lawler was called for obstruction. Well, the ruling lit a fuse under Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo, who stormed out of the dugout and was soon ejected, prompting him to start pantomiming ejections for the umpires themselves. None of it mattered when the Giants' Wilmer Flores popped up the third pitch of the ensuing at-bat to end the inning. The Diamondbacks scored in each of the first four innings, building an 8-2 lead, and they wound up clinging to what was left of that lead after the Giants got a two-run double from Ramos in the fourth inning and a two-run homer from Jung-Hoo Lee in the eighth inning. Miller recorded the ninth in the save in the ninth inning, giving up a run but working out of a bases-loaded jam by getting Koss to pop to shallow center field. The Diamondbacks are 23-21 and in fourth place in the NL West. Patches of their lineup seem to go cold for days at a time. Their bullpen, having lost its top two leverage arms, has allowed runs with regularity. The rotation has been more serviceable than impressive, and they continue to make defensive mistakes and fundamental errors, though at a lower clip than earlier in the season. So, as they work to iron out their issues, a 500 stretch against several of the NL's better teams doesn't quite feel so damning. They split six games against the New York Mets. They lost a series to the Philadelphia Phillies. They split a four-game set against the Dodgers. And they won on May 14th to claim this three-game set against the Giants. Mike Hazen said, "I think we're playing better baseball than we were in the first 2 weeks of the season. I think we're playing for cleaner baseball. I think you're seeing these games start to smooth out so that when you lose, it's just because it's baseball." Unquote. Now, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. moved into the third spot in Diamondbacks managers Torey Lovullo's lineup, with the slumping Pavin Smith dropping to the number six hole. Lovullo said, "This follows what he said he would do this year since spring training, being more adjustable with his lineups." Lovullo said, quote, "It doesn't mean you can't or won't move back to your original spot. I just think Pavin has been in a little bit of a grind. He's getting pitched too. This can take a little pressure off of him." Since April 23rd, Smith has gone just 8 for 46, that's 174, with one extra base hit. Gurriel, meanwhile, has started to heat up. Over his past 13 games, he's hitting .333, .370, and .627 with three homers and 10 RBIs. Lovullo said of Gurriel, quote, "Much better at bats. He is checking off of pitches into counts, a strike or two on him. He's getting himself back in counts. He's not missing the ball he's looking for. He's a good hitter. He's a really good hitter. And I think he's made some really good adjustments." Unquote. And that was the article, D-backs escape from San Francisco with win. And the third article from the front page of the sports section was written by Logan Stanley. It's about Arizona sports. AIA to allow penalized athletes to compete at state finals. High school athletes who were penalized because of errors or inconsistencies during last week's divisional state track and field championships will be allowed to compete in the upcoming state finals. The Arizona Interscholastic Association released a statement on Wednesday, May 14th, in response to the problems that occurred at the division finals that were held at Red Mountain and Deer Valley High Schools last week. In the statement, the AIA admitted fault and said athletes impacted by the issues will be able to compete at the AIA State Championships, which is the premier season-ending high school meet held on May 16th and 17th. The statement read, quote, "Through an investigation of documented concerns raised in the Division II girls triple jump, Division I boys long jump, and the Division I boys 3,200-meter race at Red Mountain High School on Thursday, May 8th, inconsistencies and, in some cases, errors had been discovered related to the check-in processes. As a result, the student-athletes that were impacted by these issues have been extended the opportunity to participate in this weekend's State Track and Field Championship meet at Mesa Community College. The check-in errors and inconsistencies were the fault of the association, and student athletes should have an opportunity to participate as a result of these issues," unquote. Well, the Arizona Republic reported on these issues on May 13th, detailing the error in the Division I boys 3,200 meters and the differences in the check-in processes before the jump events. A race official mistakenly mixed up the paperwork for the Division I and II boys 3,200 meters, grabbing a piece of paper that had six Division I athletes on it when they walked over to start the Division II race. Those six athletes were not allowed to race in the Division I race because they had been told they didn't check in on time, even though in reality they had. They protested, but it was decided that those athletes were not going to be able to run. Later in the evening, the AIA discovered the error and then allowed those runners who had protested to run a second heat, which ended up featuring the winning time. Some runners walked off the track because of how the situation was handled. In the Division I and II jump events at Red Mountain, the check-in process differed from the regular season. Athletes had been checking in when their flight started, as opposed to the beginning of the overall event. The state association wanted all athletes at the state meet to check in at the start of the event, regardless of when the flight started. And that threw some athletes and coaches off, leading to a high number of disqualifications. But there were inconsistencies with this process, as Division III and IV athletes competing at Deer Valley were allowed to check in at the start of their flight. That's according to Phoenix Desert Vista coach Jessica Shearer. It appeared initially that athletes who were disqualified because of the issues would not be allowed to compete at the state championships. Top finishers in the division finals events advanced to the state meet, where top athletes in each event compete against each other, regardless of their school's division. The AIA State Track and Field Championships are from May 16th and 17th at Mesa Community College. And that was the article by Logan Stanley, AIA to Allow Penalized Athletes to Compete at State Finals. Well, we're at 38 minutes past the hour. Let's turn the page and see if there's any short articles that we can find. Oh, here's a short column called Sports Briefs. These are little short 1 and 2 paragraph articles. First one is FIFA targets $1 billion revenue from Women's World Cup. FIFA, F-I-F-A, is targeting $1 billion in revenue from the Women's World Cup. Global Soccer Governing Body's President Gianni Infantino said on Tuesday at the Saudi Arabia U.S. Investment Forum 2025 in Riyadh. The 2023 Women's World Cup, hosted by Australia and New Zealand, broke even after generating more than $570 million in revenue. Infantino said, quote, "Women's football and women in football are crucially important. It's growing as well and exponentially, as we are targeting that as well to have $1 billion in revenue just with the Women's World Cup to reinvest in the women's game," unquote. The next Women's World Cup will be in 2027, hosted by Brazil, making it the first edition to be held in South America. The United States is poised to be named host of the 2031 edition, which will be expanded to 48 teams from 32. Infantino said, also said there was massive potential for football to generate more revenue outside Europe. He added, quote, if the rest of the world, in particular Saudi Arabia or the United States of America, would do just 20% of what Europe does in soccer, we could reach an amount of over $500 billion or more of GDP impact with our sport, unquote. Next is USMNT announces friendlies in World Cup tune-up. The U.S. men's national team scheduled two friendlies for early September to begin their warm-up for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, which they are co-hosting along with Canada and Mexico. The USMNT will face South Korea on September 6th at the New York Red Bulls home stadium in Harrison, New Jersey. And on September 9th, the Americans will play Japan at the home of the Columbus Crew. Now, Japan was the first team to officially qualify for the 2026 World Cup, excluding the three hosts, when it secured a top-two finish in the Asian Football Confederation qualifying group back in March. Japan is ranked number 14th in the FIFA World Ranking, the highest-ranked Asian country, and it has a 12-match unbeaten streak. South Korea, ranked number 23rd in the world, is on track to clinch its World Cup place next month, as it currently leads its AFC qualifying group. The USMNT, number 16th in the world rankings, stalled out in the round of 16 at the 2010 and 2014 and 2022 World Cups, and it failed to qualify in 2018. This is their first World Cup cycle under coach Mauricio Pochettino. The national team has not played South Korea since 2014, and most recently played Japan in 2022 in a World Cup tune-up that Japan won 2-0. And finally, Los Angeles Dodgers ace left-hander Clayton Kershaw will make his season debut on Saturday against the visiting Los Angeles Angels. The three-time Cy Young Award winner and the 2014 National League MVP has been sidelined after off-season surgery to repair meniscus damage to his left knee and a ruptured plantar plate in his left big toe. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said Kershaw's fifth and final rehab start displayed that he was ready. Kershaw gave up two runs and two hits in four innings for AAA Oklahoma City on Sunday. And those were our sports briefs. We're now at 43 minutes past the hour. Let's find an opinion piece to read. We have Lori Roberts' column. It's entitled, Hobbs Vetoes a Yankee Doodle Dumb Mandate for Schools. Governor Katie Hobbs has vetoed one of the state's most pressing educational issues. Well, at least the legislature seems to think so. Nope, it's not a bill to address the fact that an appallingly large number of kids can't read. It's not a bill to restrict some ESA spending on such academic priorities as $900 Lego sets and espresso machines. It's not even a bill to extend the soon-to-expire Proposition 123, which provides $300 million to public schools. Hobbs has vetoed a bill that would require public high schools to rewrite history and teach Arizona children that it's the Gulf of America. No, absolutely not the Gulf of you-know-where. Hobbs said in relegating the bill to the garbage, quote, Arizonans want us to work together to lower cost, secure the border, create jobs, and protect public education. Instead of joining with me to do that, this legislature has chosen to dictate how teachers refer to geographic features, unquote. Well, the bill's sponsor says it's all about instilling patriotism in our children. Representative Teresa Martinez, a Republican from Casa Grande, said it's important to start teaching pro-America to our students. What better way to promote a patriotic country and teach children about patriotism than to start calling it Gulf of America and taking pride in that? Well, one better way might be to make sure that our patriotic children have a qualified teacher in the classroom or the skills to actually read about and understand the things that make us great, of which there are many. But renaming a body of water that for 400 years has been known around the world as the Gulf of, well, it's not one of them. There's a reason why the Associated Press isn't racing to call it the Gulf of America, just because President Donald Trump says it so. It is an international news agency, after all, and an international body of water. And Trump waving his magic Sharpie doesn't suddenly change that in the rest of the world. I'm sure the Gulf of America issue will come up in geography class without a state law mandating it. And when a future president acknowledges centuries of history and changes it back, we won't be stuck with a state law insisting that it's the Gulf of America. Or a bunch of kids who can't find the Gulf of you-know-what on a map because our leaders embraced a Yankee Doodle dumb idea. Hobbes said, quote, "I encourage you to refocus your time and energy on solving real problems for Arizonans," unquote. And that was Lori Roberts' column, "Hobbes Vetoes a Yankee Doodle Dumb Mandate for Schools." At 46 minutes past the hour, we're moving on over to the entertainment section. Well, we'll begin by reading today's horoscopes. We will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you navigating uncertainty? Well, as the Moon and Jupiter clash, there are no easy answers. Posturing will only complicate communication. For Taurus, April 20th to May 20th birth dates, you have shared what you have, so others will reciprocate, right? Well, temper your expectations, because the Moon and Jupiter are clashing. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, you have good news to share? Well, mind who you choose to confide in, as the Moon and Jupiter face off. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, is anxiety creeping in? The Moon and Jupiter's clash creates this nagging sensation that it's all too good to be true. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, are you seeking validation? Do not confuse earning a friend's attention with earning their respect. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, is your confidence faltering? Well, as the Moon and Jupiter clash, no one would guess that insecurity lies behind your smile. For Libras, birth dates from September 23rd through October 23rd, are you feeling judged? Well, it might be in your head, because the Moon's clash and Jupiter will prevent you from seeing the facts. And now for Scorpio, birth dates from October 24th through November 21st. Are you asking for a financial favor? Be sure you can trust your benefactor as the Moon and Jupiter clash. And then for Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you feeling unsettled? Well, with this clash between the Moon and Jupiter, intrusive thoughts can complicate an otherwise pleasant day. And for Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, do you have a guilty conscience? Why is that? You're going to have difficulty pinpointing the cause. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th, are you longing to make a contribution? You freely give to friends or a community cause today, but are your efforts appreciated? And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are you letting a secret slip? You are in a trusting mood, maybe too trusting. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice from Abigail Van Buren. Our first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, my father's wife, Carol, loves to thrift shop. She enjoys hunting for a good deal, particularly if she can find things for our 5-year-old daughter, Liana. It's sweet how excited she gets when she brings over a pile of new clothes. The problem is, Carol has really different taste than my husband and I do, and most of her purchases are not appropriate for a little girl to be wearing. I'm talking hot pants, tiny tank tops, sequin midriff shirts, and leopard miniskirts. These outfits don't pass the school dress code or the mama dress code. We have told Liana she can wear these things only at home and made a dress-up box for them. And she's okay with that. But I'm not sure what to tell Carol when she asks why Liana isn't wearing her new clothes. Several times I've had to intervene when she's told our daughter to change into the things that she brought before we go out. I've said things like, we'd like Liana to be more covered up. But it's like Carol can't hear me. Well, how can I spare Carol's feelings while enforcing our standards? This isn't something that I want to budge on, signed Modest Mama in the Midwest. And Abby responds, Dear Mama, you have tried the oblique approach. Carol doesn't get the message. Now it's time for you to step up and be a mom. Tell Carol you are grateful for her generosity, but you do not want your daughter overexposed in public. Tell her you want Liana to concentrate on her intellectual growth rather than on glitz and glamour, which is why you feel sequin midriff shirts, hot pants, and leopard print clothing are not appropriate. And then give her back the items you feel are objectionable so she can donate them again. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, my son is 65 and has been dating a 25-year-old he met in his art class. I keep hearing from him that she says she loves him. I tell him it is ridiculous. He lives with me and wants to know if they can move in with me. I am 86. And he has been living with me for 10 years, which I am blessed and thankful for. I told him no way. I can't believe that her mother is even allowing this. Am I too old-fashioned, or is this the new fad? Signed, Disapproving in Arizona. Dear Disapproving, you are thinking pragmatically. Your son thinks he's in love. At 25, a young woman is considered an adult and capable of making her own choices in romance, even May-December ones. It is possible that she loves your son. There is more than one kind of love. Before drawing a line in the sand, make an effort to get to know her. With time, she may grow tired of being with both of you and decide to move on. If you are adamant that you cannot tolerate another woman living in your home, you are right to refuse. But I caution you, if you do, you may find your son will move out to be with her. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. You can contact Abigail one of two ways. You can go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And now we have some time for a couple of comic strips. In the comic strip Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, in the first frame, Sergeant Snorkel is looking at his wrist and he says, I did 10,000 steps today. And the next frame, Lieutenant Fuzz says to him, Yeah, but they were all between here and the mess hall. And that was Beetle Bailey. In the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, Wanda, the mom, has shown up at the preschool and is talking to the teacher and says, How did Wren do today? And the teacher says, Oh, really good. And the next frame, she waves to Wanda to follow her as they start to walk. And the teacher says she's right on track with counting and the alphabet. And then they look out into the playground area. And she says, and her bossing skills are off the charts. And Wanda looks and sees all the kids being lined up and Wren telling them where to stand and pointing and gesturing. And Wanda says, yeah, she gets that from her sister. And that was Baby Blues. And in the Peanuts comic strip drawn by Charles Schulz, in the first frame, Charlie Brown is walking, and he's got a dog dish on his head with food in it. And he's got his arms stretched out. I guess he's kind of balancing it. And in the next frame, he gets up to Snoopy's doghouse. He's still got the dog food in the dog dish on his head. And then he takes it off his head, and he says, "How about that? I walked all the way out here with your supper dish balanced on my head." In the last frame, Snoopy thinks, "This is what happens when you eat in the same place every night." And that was Peanuts. And in the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, there's Earl sitting on the sofa with the dog laying on the sofa next to him. And it looks like Earl's got a laptop on his lap. Nelson comes in and looks over the back and says, "What are you writing, Grandpa?" And he says, "My obituary. It's an account of all the important things I've done in my life." And Nelson says, "Like being my grandpa?" And in the last frame he says, "Yep, that's paragraphs 1 through 10. And that was Pickles. Well, before we go, we ought to wish happy birthday to some celebrities who are celebrating today. The actress Anna Maria Alberghetti turns 89 today. Artist Ralph Steadman turns 89. Actor Chaz Palminteri turns 73. TV host and sportscaster Dan Patrick turns 68. Actor and comedian Samoor turns 59. Actor Russell Hornsby turns 51. Actor David Krumholz turns 47. Actress Jamie Lynn Sigler turns 44. And actress Alexandra Breckenridge turns 43. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, May 15th, 2025. I hope you have a great day today. Bye-bye.